Hey everyone, welcome to the second episode of the fourth wonderful season of the Sons of History podcast. We are going to have a dynamic conversation that, I hope you take a lot of notes for this one. What do you think, Alan?
I think we're going to be having a discussion where you won't have time to take notes. I'm going to recommend you record this, or, you know, when you watch it on YouTube or Epoch TV, just do a rewind, rewind,
because you're
going to want to learn. You're going to want to learn this.
Yeah, I don't think people are going to have to record it, because that's what we're doing. We're recording the conversation via video and audio. So if you're listening on the podcast only, be sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening. It would be really awesome if you left us like a 5-star review and a glowing, or a 5-star rating and a glowing review. That would be amazing. A lot of people have been doing that here lately. Thank you very much for those. YouTube, be sure to subscribe to us. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, so go follow us over there. Dude, we're well over 100,000 views on that, on the Jaws video.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's hilarious. Nothing else is getting, nothing else is happening, but Jaws is making its way.
A video once that made it on TikTok or Instagram that quite a lot of people saw it, and it ended up being on someone else's podcast?
Yeah, I did one. This was right after Ruth Bader Ginsburg died, and look, AOC, she's low-hanging fruit. So it was so easy. She did her thing of, you know, if the Senate is not going to adhere to RBG's dying wish, then we will. And I'm like, no, you won't, because you're in the House of Representatives, so you don't have a say in the matter. That got about 500,000 views, so that was pretty neat. That was fun. It's got to go viral, man. Otherwise, people aren't going to touch it. So, speaking of going viral, our road trip history documentaries have gone absolutely bonkers. We did a road trip history documentary on Eisenhower and Nimitz and their hometowns of Fredericksburg and Denison. Alan and I are both out here in Texas. So, yeah, that was fun. Go check it out. Learn about two great World War II heroes and two Texas natives. Also, this Tuesday, we will have a new military interview up on our YouTube channel. This is a Cold War veteran. I'm talking to him about some of the stuff that he did within naval intelligence. I think you'll enjoy that. Also, we are streaming on Epic TV. So if you're an Epic Time subscriber, you can watch the show and tell people about us. Also, if you're a subscriber, you can check out some of my work, like some of my military interviews. This one on Jack Hamlin, I know I mentioned this earlier. And then this one was my creme de la creme, the one about the Italian kid, the American Italian kid in World War II Italy. His family was stuck there all throughout World War II. He helps the British. Really fascinating story. And then among other things that I'm doing a lot of writing. Alan, are you putting anything together for the Epic Times anytime soon? Should we be on the lookout?
Well, I mean, if you're referring to something I'm writing, don't have anything planned as of yet. But if they will, you know, I'm hoping that they'll take the interviews I have of Kenneth Ramagost, Mike Bunn, and Wesley Odom regarding the Galvez's Gulf Coast campaign. I'm working on that one, putting something together. If they will take that, then I'll be happy. We can put that on Epoch TV. So, but in terms of writing, I just got not enough time.
Yeah, no, I hear you, man.
You probably heard the glasses falling on the floor. So.
No, your time is much less than mine. I am blessed with more time. All I got to do is take care of my dog and brush my teeth. Now, we do have some gear. You can go check out our Sons of History gear, Time for Choosing. on our website, among other things, coffee mugs, come and take it. We've also got a come and take it t-shirt. Our history comes in threes. You can check those out. So check out our merch link on our website, thesonsofhistory.com. We're just doing a lot of stuff. So we're going to be talking about this SCOTUS session, the Supreme Court of the United States session that they had this year. A lot of landmark decisions. And we're going to be discussing that with Joe Wolverton, a friend of ours, constitutional scholar, legal scholar. Along with that, we're also going to be talking about, should these cases even be brought forward to the Supreme Court? Because we've gotten to the point where we are legislating through the court system, which is so dangerous because people are not making these decisions. You take out the Democratic Republic process where it's we the people through our senators and representatives on the state level and on the federal level to make our decisions. But no, we're coming up against either corporations and an individual or two individuals or two corporations. It's not a good place to be in, but we're going to be talking about that. But before that, we're going to do This Week in History. You ready, Alan?
I'm ready to go.
All right. The last will be first and the first will be last. So I will be first and later in life, I will be last. My This Week in History is September 27th, 1964. This is when the Warren Commission issued its report. It's 10-month thorough, very, very thorough investigation of the JFK assassination that had taken place on November 22nd, 1963. And the Warren Commission really left no holes. It pretty much wrapped that investigation up. No questions lingered. It was a lone gunman, Lee Harvey Oswald, taken care of by a good friend of Mr. Dulles, Jack Ruby. You talk about some just insane stuff that came out after that commission report. That's the Warren Commission, the group of men that were put on that commission, and what came out of that report is probably singularly why we still have so many questions. And just the burning of evidence, just a ton of stuff. I'm watching Oliver Stone's latest documentary. You can check that out, which I will actually use that as my movie recommendation at the end. But the Warren Commission report is just further proof that you can always trust the results of the government.
All right. Now, for me, you familiar with that?
Domesday. Yeah, I think we've discussed that before.
Okay. Well, leading up to that, what my This Week in Review, or rather This Week in History, is going to take place on September the 27th through the 28th of 1066. What was that, you say? Well, very simple. It was the Norman invasion of England. And now what happened was earlier that year, around January the 5th, King Edward, the Confessor of England, dies without an heir. Now, contemporary sources stated that he had promised both William, Duke of Normandy, and Harold Godwinson, the Earl of Sussex, as his successor. So they both, were claiming the throne. Harold took it, but he was immediately challenged by his brother Tostig and King Harald Hardrada of Norway. There was a battle at Stamford Bridge where Harald defeated Harald Hardrada and his brother Tostig. They were both killed in the battle, and that was on September the 25th. So, okay, great. Now, down on the English Channel, William, the Duke of Normandy, was trying to cross the English Channel. Finally, on the 27th, he got the favorable winds. Now, he had received the blessings from the aristocracy of Normandy as well as Pope Alexander II. So, 27th, favorable winds. They cross the English Channel. They land on English soil, near the town of Pevensey. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. It's near Eastbourne. So they landed there on the 28th of September with about 7,000 men, maybe more, 8,000. There are no exact sources to state how many there were. And they marched towards Hastings. Now, after the Battle of Stamford Bridge, Harold Godwinson was marching south. He caught wind of the invasion. They don't know when. But he had 7,000 men with him, and he had to march about 240 miles south to get to William and his men. So they finally, well, you know what? No, I'm going to stop there. And here's why. Because I know that this session has gone a little bit long, but if you want to, you know, and we'll finish the story because, you know, there's more to this story. It's very important because the British royal family of today can trace their ancestry back to William the Conqueror. It's not a straight line. You've got a little zigzags here and there, especially when you had like the Wars of the Roses and the Tudors and all that. But if you want to read a little bit more about it, visit the Bayeux Tapestry in Bayeux, France, and you'll know a little bit about how it ends. So, but that'll be for another This Week in History.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I know that you meant to say Earl of Wessex.
What did I say?
Sussex.
Did I say Sussex? I meant to say, yep, my bad. Earl of Wessex.
Earl of Wessex, Harold Godwinson. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's This Week in History. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, our guest is Joe Wolverton. He is, in fact, one of our favorite guests. We've had him, I believe, on the show more than any other guest that we've had. He's a constitutional scholar and lawyer. He's a regular contributor to the New American Magazine. He is also the author of three works, The Real James Madison, What Degree of Madness? Madison's Method to America to Make America States Again, and The Founder's Recipe. Lastly, and so I know we will discuss this, Alan, but he's the founder of a Margie Group, which offers, quote, a comprehensive history curriculum that replaces mindless memorization of trivial facts with inspirational stories and engaging and illuminating lessons. Their principle-based courses teach students to use history as a lens through which they see a clearer image of their own time. Speaking of a Margie Group and those courses, Alan, you took one of those courses, didn't you?
Yes, I took the U.S. Constitution course. Really enjoyed it. I did not know what to expect, but yeah, there was no memorization. He introduced us. He has this book, which I have a couple of his books. This one's called The Founder's Recipe. And it has 37 different people in here that he quotes that really the founding fathers. You need to know where the founding fathers got their information from. This is a great book to see some of the quotes from the men that the founding fathers, where they got their information from, because they did not just show up and say, hey, let's have a democracy. They knew that it didn't work, and they had history on their side on that one. So his class, he introduced us to a lot of primary sources, a lot of authors, and I bought a couple of them for myself just to read them. But yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a lot of discussions. It made you think, a lot of critical thinking, not critical theory, but critical thinking, and highly recommend his classes very much.
All right. Well, without further ado, we will bring on our good friend Joe. He is now on the line. Joe, how are you doing, man?
Doing very well. Better now that I'm with you guys.
Well, you know, I got to say, I'm glad to have you on board again because, we'll discuss about the. Maybe at another time, but I did take your class, and I very much enjoyed your class. We talked about the Constitution, and wow, I learned quite a bit, but I got to tell you, I walked out of there pissed off because of the direction our country has taken, veering away from where we were supposed to be, so... Yes.
That's a, you know, there's a good, talking about Edward Cook, there's a good quotation from him about that. If you find your country veering away from its constitutional principles, then, you know, it becomes the duty of every man to steer it back, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have told several people about your school, and hopefully you'll get some more students here in the near future. So
that'd be awesome. I'd love it. I'm doing the Constitution semester, Constitution year, Founders Recipe year, Western Civ. I haven't taught that class in 7 years. I'm so excited. Teaching ancient Greece and ancient Rome. Dude, the stories. I mean, these are the stories our founders were raised on. And it's every week is just so exciting to tell, because these people in this class have never heard these stories, you know. And I showed them there's some standards when I was teaching at a brick and mortar high school in Arizona, and they came out with these, you know, standards that we were supposed to meet according to the state. When it came to Greece, Greece and Rome, the most important thing was to teach the mythology. And, you know, that's fun, but teaching the actual history of Greece and Rome is seriously like giving people a crystal ball, because you see things that happened 3,000 years ago that are literally happening today. So teaching that way, and I teach a U.S. history, which is lovely, that I love teaching that, and just people going, what? Why were we never taught this? Well, obvious why you weren't taught it, but yeah, so I'm grateful for that. And I do like that people are like, whoa, I never knew that before, you know?
Well, the cook and the ancient Romans, I'm going to tie this in together with one of my favorite quotes from Cicero. It says, "For there is no one thing in which human worth is more nearly allied to the power of the gods than to found new states or to preserve those already founded." So hopefully we're doing our due diligence.
In that same chapter, Cicero mentions that if you want to take a hand in restoring your republic or protecting it, that you're better to read what the founding fathers read than what the founding fathers wrote, which is one of those things that I live by and that I first read in Cicero years and years and years ago. He was like, you know, you can read what certain people wrote, but read what made them who they are if you really want to do again what they did, you know.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to not do that on this show. We're going to discuss some of the non-founding fathers. I guess, I don't know if you would maybe call them crazy uncles and aunts of the SCOTUS session of this year. We're not going to go over, obviously, all of those decisions that were made, but there were some what you would call landmark decisions that were made this year. And I think top of mind is the abortion issue that was, I almost said resolved, but come on. But we're going to get to that one last. We want to discuss just a few of the decisions that were made on the gun rights, the concealed carry, which was a situation up in New York, and then we've got a religious one. We're going to sort of combine the two, the one up in Washington State, and then another one in Maine, sort of your East Coast, West Coast bias word. We have to deal with East Coast, West Coast bias down in Houston, sports-wise. But anyways, and then we'll get to the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization, WHO, coming through in the clutch with the abortion. So, Joe, want to talk to you about the gun rights one first. And this is the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association Incorporated versus Bruin. This wound up as a 6-3 decision. Interestingly enough, all of these decisions that we're going to be discussing ended up in a 6-3 decision, which is not, that doesn't really bode very well for, I guess, the implications of where our country is on the political divides. But I want to just bring out some of the things about this case and tell me or tell us what you think about the decision going forward, what it's going to do and what it means. And does it even line up with the originality of the Second Amendment? But New York was only providing a license to carry if you showed, quote unquote, proper cause to have one. The plaintiffs said that this violated their Second and 14th Amendment rights. So Clarence Thomas, in his decision, wrote that the government must affirmatively prove that the firearms regulation is part of the historical tradition that delimits the outer bounds of the right to keep and bear arms. We can discuss a little bit on his verbiage there, but what do you think about this decision that was made?
Well, you know, it's sort of like what Alan was talking about when with regard to any of the rights delineated in the Bill of Rights, and that is, if the government giveth, the government can taketh away. So the fact that there are so many people who look upon this as some sort of victory is an actually, to me, a slavish mentality. We're asking our masters to be better masters instead of reminding them that they are the servant. And so we're celebrating the fact that our master gave us a little more gruel to eat, when in reality, what we should say is, I don't care if nine of you agree. It mattereth not to me, because I have a, you do not have a Second Amendment right to carry a weapon. You have a right to carry a weapon because your right to protect your life, your liberty, and your property is inherent in every child of God. The fact that your life is a gift from God carries with it, concomitant with that gift, is your right. And your, in fact, the founding fathers, Jefferson and Madison and Franklin and Adams, they all said it is your duty to protect that right. And I get really rankled when I hear conservatives applaud these things. I understand why, because there's a comprehension of politics as some sort of contest where if you move the ball toward the goal line, then you're doing well. Well, I think the goalposts have been moved so many times. The rules have been changed so many times, right? The size of the field has been changed so many times. Everybody's switching jerseys whenever they want to, that it's confusing to know. And so, yes, I understand that those people who view politics as some sort of contest would celebrate this decision. Whereas I say, why were we paying attention to it in the first place? Because if you understood the source of your liberty, including you should be able to park an F-16 in your yard if you want to. Because guess what? As you know, it has been said by many, and I'm referring to John Locke, who said, a prior restraint on liberty nullifies that liberty. So if you're saying you cannot carry a gun unless, it doesn't matter what you say after the word unless, that's a prior restraint on your liberty. Now, what would be a proper restraint? A proper restraint would be if I used my gun in the commission of a crime. Then that's a proper restraint, because then I'll be charged with having violated a crime. I'll have my due process, right? I'll have the right to answer those charges in front of a fair tribunal, right? All of that. But to own any weapon, if I have a 16-pound cannon in my front yard, it really doesn't matter to you, and it matters not to the government. Unless I do something with that affects negatively the life, liberty, and property of some other person. And so, yes, I understand conservatives are going to be so happy that, you know, that our master threw us an extra bone this time, and we're all happy, but we would be much happier if we went through the struggle that it would take to realize that those decisions of the Supreme Court are no more binding than my opinion, right? The Supreme Court is meant to be advisory to the other, to its two sister branches. It is not to be, as Jefferson said, a despotism of oligarchy, right? And that is what it has become, because we literally look to the Supreme Court to be the ultimate arbiter of what is and is not the law. And they were never meant to do that. Our founding fathers would reject roundly and universally such a notion that because six black-robed octogenarians came down on the side kind of, you know, complete freedom of ownership and carrying of a weapon, that we should celebrate that is slavish mentality. But we've been in this position for so long that it's like Machiavelli said, to convince a slave that he's free is as hard as it is to convince a free man that he's a slave. Right. Well, and so here we are.
I want to pin something down that you said, because I know what you're talking about. And I think we all would love that we could retroactively go back to the beginning. And it's like, look, these are our rights. If you don't want them, if you don't want to embrace them, if you don't want to carry a gun, or if you don't want to practice your religion, or if you don't want to have free speech, that's up to you. That's your right not to embrace the right that God has given you. We can't go back, because hundreds of years have passed and we are where we are. It would be nice if we can move backwards towards the original position. But the fact of the matter is like these decisions that come through the Supreme Court are binding.
But no, they're not. They're binding because we act as if they are.
Well, they're binding.
Is Clarence Thomas going to come to your house?
That's my point. That's my point. Clarence Thomas is not going to come to your house, but the FBI or your local police or somebody will. And it's the same as like, look, when they say, oh, you don't have to pay your taxes, nobody's putting a gun to your head. I'm like, yeah, they are. You do have to pay your taxes.
Right. That's a bit of a different story. But when it comes to gun confiscation, they're going to have to actually come to your house to confiscate it. Now, this is the problem we get into. The problem we get to is this, is that we love to put pictures of the founding fathers on the wall. We love to hide behind their skirts and quote their fancy words, but we don't want to do what they did, which is to say things like, as was a couple of days ago, the anniversary, I regret I have but one life to give for my country. No, I want with my lips to draw nigh unto liberty, but with my actions be far from it. I want to sit comfortably in my home and shake my fist on Facebook when the Supreme Court does something bad, and then clap when they do something good, like the trained little slave that I am. So we don't have to go back, Dustin. We can go forward to liberty if we're willing to do as our fathers did, and genuinely and completely and of sincere heart place our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor on the altar of liberty. But we're not willing to do that. It's lovely to have Madison and, you know, Washington to have their little faces, but to do what they did, we don't have the stomach for it because we've been on the plantation and it's comfortable here. And so when you say that they do have force, because we give them that force, read Federalist 46. And he didn't even imagine this. There are 330 million Americans. I don't care if you had a million FBI, which you don't even have a tenth of that. And you wouldn't have anyone coming to your door if it wasn't for state cooperation with unconstitutional acts of the feds. So we got to get a few governors and state legislators with the Stugats to stand up to the feds and say, you don't have that authority. I'm standing as the barrier between you and the people, as I was meant to do. But we don't have that. And so we've become accustomed to the states being no more than, you know, than satrapies of the federal empire, that we're just accustomed to whatever. I mean, Article 6 and the conversation's over. There is no list of the Supreme Court decisions in the supreme law of the land. You can say they have effect, but they have effect because we treat them as if they do. It's no different than if I went out and told everyone in my neighborhood, come to my house, surrender your weapons. If they did it, who cares if I have the actual authority? The Supreme Court, the president, the Congress, they have so much de facto power because of our complacence, and we want to be complacent because it's comfortable, and liberty is difficult and dangerous, and nobody likes difficult and dangerous.
Well, I know that this conversation can be applied to everything that we're going to discuss today. You know, some of the other topics that we're going to discuss. I want to swing back on the gun rights real quick before we move on.
Yeah, and on it, like, I just want to pinpoint, I want us to try to, like, I know we can go and talk about the Federalist Papers and how, like, the Founding Fathers thought and what we should be doing as citizens, 330 million, and what we would like for the politicians to do and what we'd like for the states' rights to gravitate more towards state rights and push off the federal. But I would like us to focus on these decisions that were made and where things move from there instead of discussing, well, this is, we shouldn't even be in this position. I completely agree. We shouldn't be in this position. It's been 150 plus years of moving in the wrong direction. So, but I just want to add that in there. If we can stick to what it is that we're trying to discuss, go ahead.
But how do we get out of the position, Dustin? That's the question. If I agree, we're in this position, but then doesn't it become an issue of, all right, let's debate the competing concepts of how we get ourselves out. And I don't think that perpetuating the power of the Supreme Court is the way out, because I think doing that has slid us farther and farther away. And I think that education, that's why, you know, Jefferson, you can't be ignorant and free. And so that's why I think if we could teach people not what it's supposed to be, but what it really is, if we as human beings, as Americans, gave it effect. And so was it a good decision? What do you mean by good? Was it more, was it closer to what should be? Sure. Yes. Okay. If that's the opinion, if that's the question, is it closer to what should be? Yes.
Well, you know, this was a little bit towards what I was saying in your class, that, you know, the federal government is like a homeowners association, and we don't want the HOA to tell us how often we can turn on our lights or what TV shows we can watch. And I agree with you that what we have done in this country is given the federal government, the Supreme Court, access to our homes as an HOA, and they're telling us what we can eat, what time we can eat, what we can wear, and it's none of their business. Mm-hmm. So, but I want to go back. You had stated before, and I've heard you say this on numerous occasions, that some of the people that the Founding Fathers, the books that they read, no one has ever heard of them. And they even said things that are very important. And I want to mention a couple of them real quick. Although with Thomas Jefferson, and this is going to relate to the gun question. Thomas Jefferson stated, he was talking about a strong body makes a strong mind, but he goes on and he says, "Let your gun therefore be the constant companion of your walks. No free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms." That was one of them, which, in my opinion, right there, that tells me that the Founding Fathers did not limit gun ownership to being in a militia that is what we call the National Guard, and that they were locked up in some armory. That's number one. The next one, and I know you're a fan of Henry St. George Tucker, and he was being critical of the English Bill of Rights, that yes, they did protect the rights of some people to carry arms, but that was Protestants. And so you were denying people who were not Protestants, Catholics. So for them, for just those two guys alone, I would think that if I know these quotes, why don't the Supreme Court justices, at least, if we're talking about just the Supreme Court giving us our rights, if that's the way people want to look at it, even if we were looking at it in that way, those three justices have to know that these things were said. So are they ignorant, or are they just defying it, defying what the intent of the Founding Fathers are?
I wouldn't be so sure that they know those things, first of all, because who's going to teach them? I went to law school. We used the same books as they used at Harvard. We never read the Constitution. I had a 1-year class on the Constitution, never opened it. We read many cases about the Second Amendment, never read the text of the Second Amendment. Never. So I would say they could be ignorant, and I would assume that most of them are, because why are they going to take the time and the effort to learn things that would diminish the scope of their power? It's like Jefferson said when he said, our judges are no more moral or less so than any other judge, and their motto will always be that which expands my jurisdiction is good for me. And so that's what I think. They don't want to know. And now, if I were sitting down with Clarence Thomas, I would pro I would likely agree with him on most everything we would talk about with regard to political philosophy, right? But I don't, and he might be the sort, Clarence Thomas might be the sort that would say, I agree with you, and I think we should not have the power that we have. But I don't think that they know, and if they do, they're not going to pursue something that diminishes the scope of their power. How many people do you know that do that? I mean, Cincinnatus, George Washington, how many people do you know that purposely take positive acts to diminish the scope of their authority? Very few people. And so I don't blame the Supreme Court, because tyrant's going to tyrant. That's what they do. I don't blame them at all. I blame the fact that we now have the opportunity to know these things, and these things are purposely kept from us. And so if we talk about these Supreme Court decisions, we can talk about them as sort of academic endeavors. We can say, well, this case, what is this judge? What is the anti-commandeering? We can go on and on about these things, right? And like I say, I practice, federal constitutional law for years, and I can discuss them with you. But what I also know is there is a greater need and expediency of education in this country to where we can get enough people to understand just enough that they are not dependent on those freaking despots for their liberty, and that there aren't enough of them to deny us these things if we, and you don't have to agree on everything. You just have to agree on the fact that they cannot determine the limits of their own power, which is what they're essentially doing. But I understand, Dustin. Don't think I'm trying to be obtuse or difficult on purpose. I'm not. But I think that there is danger where people like of your profile, y'all are growing exponentially, the sons of history. It's remarkable to, I just looked last night and saw that how big of an influence you have now. And I think, yes, you can have those times where you discuss the, legalistic merits of this or that Supreme Court opinion. But with your platform, particularly, and I know y'all personally, and I know your mind and heart on this, it is necessary. And like I say, we can go on and discuss them legalistically, and I'm fine with that. But it is necessary with your profile, to make sure that at least for a minute, people hear something that maybe pushes them to examine, why do we care what the Supreme Court says? If only pushes them, why is Joey mentioning, this case? Why is he saying these things when I was taught the exact opposite in school, when I was taught that the Supreme Court is the ultimate decider? Why is he saying that? So don't get me twisted. I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to be contentious. I'm just trying to be, take the time to make sure that the thousands of people that listen to y'all and watch y'all do for a second hear there's another way of thinking about this.
So the question I have is that the opinions that Alito and Clarence Thomas voiced as to why they voted the way they did, how they came to their decision. I got the sense that they realized that these were issues that were meant for the states, which was why they kicked them back to the states. I see that as a step in the right direction.
That, again, if we're going to speak legalistically, yes, that is a step in the right direction, right? But the states, I mean, look at the words in the Constitution. They remain, retain, right? the states never gave those gave that authority to the Supreme Court. So for the Supreme Court to say, we're giving it back to you, well, I never gave it to you in the first place. If you're saying you're giving it back, that's an admission on your part that you've nullified the Constitution. And that's the issue. No one thinks about it like that, right? No one says we're being gracious and we're giving back to the states. Wait, you're not giving me back anything unless you want to admit that you unconstitutionally usurped that authority. And if you want to admit that, then we can go ahead and discuss what the ramifications of that sort of despotism should be.
I completely agree with what you're saying, but you know, you have to have someone like a Thomas or an Alito to behave similar. I mean, you like Roman history. Cincinnatus was given all this power. George Washington was given all this power, but they relinquished it, both of them. And I was hopeful that what Thomas and Alito did was say, we are behaving like Cincinnatus and Washington. This shouldn't be in our purview. This shouldn't be ours to decide. Back to the states, and then that's it. And now it's with the states, and they make the decision from there.
And that's why I said they probably individually thought that. I really respect Clarence Thomas and his political philosophy. Everything he's ever said from the court, I pretty much agree with. I mean, he's even throwing Lawrence out there, right? He's saying, let's just overturn this and send this back to the states. I agree with that completely. And that drives people, even conservatives, like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes on that, right? But I agree with him in that. But, and that's good. If you want to view it from that angle, yes, we can say Alito and Thomas, they are guys that I believe genuinely understand federalism. They understand that these things should have remained, because they didn't do it themselves, right? Alito and Thomas didn't usurp this authority. And so you're right. Individually, those judges are doing the right thing. My whole beef is that as a society, we have got to break our habit of turning to the Supreme Court for our marching orders when it comes to our rights, for them to set out the boundaries of our liberty. That's what I'm talking about. Are the judges themselves, you know, do we have stellar judges that understand federalism? I think so, right? I mean, I definitely believe so. But we have a real dearth of understanding in this country, and we will never return to the place where we even know what liberty is, unless we're willing to shock people by exposing to them the counter narrative, right? And so, I mean, it cost Cicero his life. You talk about Roman history,
yeah.
Right? He could have shut up and said, look, Mark Antony's in charge now. Okay, realpolitik, Mark Antony's in charge. He's a soldier. I'm just going to play ball and occupy my little narrow band of the political spectrum. Cicero delivered the Philippics in his face. And then he died. Cicero's a hero. Today, people would look at Cicero and say, dude, you could have done so much good if you'd stayed alive. That's what we would say to him today. Why are you getting your hands cut off and your tongue cut out for standing up to Mark Antony? Because it's the right thing.
In a way, do you sort of see, so you have cases that come before district courts, federal courts, court of appeals, and you know, if they're lucky, they get to the Supreme Court. And a lot of these people, and some of them, like, take, for instance, the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association or the Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, you've got people that are saying, look, I know the rights that I'm supposed to have. And therefore, to an extent, you've got regular citizens who are not politicians like a Cicero, who are coming in and becoming the Cicero and saying, look, I want to take this as far as possible so that we can possibly, with all of the rigmarole and all the bad decisions that have been piled on top of each other, possibly move us back towards originalism, the founding, and what is exactly like is supposed to be taking place. Do you think, as I from my perspective, I can't stand the amount of court cases that are going on. I discuss this quite often about how many laws that we have. No one knows how many laws we have. That's just criminal laws, not including the civil laws. Nobody knows how many criminal laws that we have on the books. So from my perspective, it's almost like an undoing, a hopefully like sort of like you're cutting through red tape and possibly, like you said, Thomas wanting to throw out a bunch of cases. And I think that should be done. I think possibly instead of taking on cases that are presented to them, and I know that there's a method to the madness, but you know, going back and saying, hey, you know, along with our session, let's go ahead and review some of these really bad decisions that have taken place. Maybe that's not right because, you know, like I said,
that is right. It is right in the sense that you mean it in the narrow way that you're defining that word right. Yes, it is right. And I'm not going to argue with you that it isn't. The problem is this, Dustin. The problem is that's great that it's 6-3 in favor of your right to carry a weapon. What are we? I want to know what is going to happen in 8 years when it's 6-3 the other way. Are you going to say, well, it should be that you have the right to keep and bear arms completely, but now we've got to do something to fight against this Supreme Court decision? If that's the tack you're taking, I'm jumping off. I'm not riding that horse with you.
Right.
Right. So yes, if we're praising the good, yeah, I'm gonna praise it with you. But if we're praising it, and then in 8 years, because you know it's gonna happen.
Right.
In 8 years, you are going to have every round of ammunition will be microchipped, so you can't even reload anymore. They will not, reloading will be a thing of the past. And if the Supreme Court says, you know what, because it's the pendulum is swung the other way, and six judges say, you know what, no one can own anything but a hunting rifle, and only one of them, and only 20 rounds of ammunition per year, are you going to say, I am nullifying that because they have not that authority? Or are you going to say, but this is where we are, so we have to fight back?
Yeah, and I think to your point, there 8, 10, 20 years from now, you could have it to the, because this is already one of those, I mean, even freaking Joe Biden has said, you know, you shouldn't have this type of weapon. You should only, your Second Amendment is only for hunting, right? That is taken off. I mean, and it's the furthest thing away from the reason why we have the Second Amendment. But
oh, it's for hunting, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
Specifically duck hunting.
Yeah, more and more people are gravitating to that. A false, just a lie. And if you're gonna have that, and you have a decision later on that overturns, you're gonna have people that are like, yeah, okay. And I get what you're saying. Like, you have to have the history behind why these amendments were, this Bill of Rights was put together.
I'm telling you, man, and this is one of the most popular things that I do in my Constitution, my year-long Constitution class, was the passing of the Bill of Rights, ratifying of the Bill of Rights, a good thing or a bad thing? It was horrible. Horrible. Because you read Federalist 78, and Hamilton nailed it. When you have a list of the things the federal government cannot do supposedly to protect your liberty, they are going to define every one of those words until they define your rights out of existence. And that's what's happened. And so but my only point is, there's a saying that we have down here, you can't be pig and puppy. You can either wallow in the mud and be pig, or you can come sit in my lap and get petted like a puppy, but you can't be both. And so if you're going to say the Supreme Court did a good thing and, you know, we need to look at it that way, that's fine. But in 10 years, when six of them say you're going to need to turn in any handgun because a civilian doesn't need a handgun to hunt, a civilian doesn't need a handgun to protect his home, you don't need more than 15 rounds, and you can only buy them from approved vendors who have proven that they've microchipped them from the factory. Are you going to say, nope, not paying attention to that? Or are you going to follow the law and fight against it and try to get it overturned? Or because if you do that, you're being pig and puppy. But I'm saying, I understand what you're saying, that yes, but I'm just worried that in 10 years, we're not going to have made any progress toward genuine restoration of liberty because we're not walking in that direction.
Yeah, we're moving. We continue to just be in modern opinion and label it as, okay, this is what the Constitution says, even when it doesn't.
Yeah, give speeches about the Constitution. I'm like, how many of y'all recognize this line? And I just freestyle a line. And people are like, yeah, yeah. Do you know what article that's in? Oh, and you have people, Article 1. And it's just, I completely freestyled off the top of my head. And these are people that self-identify as conservatives, constitutionalists. I'm telling you, the dearth of understanding is causing a famine of wisdom in this country. But we can undo that. And I believe, like, to your point, yes, these decisions that you're talking about, they're good in a vacuum, in the sense that, yes, they move the ball toward the goalpost that we, you know, toward the goal line. They move the ball toward the goal line. It's a first down. But the problem is, in 5 years, a first down's not going to be 10 yards. It's going to be 15 yards.
Let me ask you this. Supreme Court of the United States, like the whole, the court system was established when the Constitution was written. What should be the purpose of the Supreme Court?
Well, okay. Now, and I want to make clear, this isn't my opinion, but if you read the records of the Federal Convention,
opinion.
What's that?
Well, I don't want your opinion.
My opinion is based on, I'm like, seriously, I'm like a tour guide. I point to the great things done by better men than I, right? The things that I've contributed to this world are negligible, but I do have the wisdom to walk the path that wiser men have walked. And so it's like, what did they say in Philadelphia? What was the purpose of the Supreme Court? To be a ballast to the other sister branches. In other words, if the executive branch goes beyond its constitutional authority, then the Supreme Court is there to say, hey, I think you've gone beyond it. And for him to either ignore or adhere to that counsel, same for the legislative branch, it was to have no direct effect on the lives, liberty, as Madison says in 39, the lives, liberty, property, prosperity, and improvement of the lives of all Americans should never be impacted by the federal government at all.
So the Supreme Court was meant to take on federal cases only that dealt specifically with what was listed in the Constitution. Right. So because, you know, we were bringing up about some of the religious freedom, and, you know, and a lot of people don't know this, but when the Constitution was written, 9 of the 13 states had established churches.
Right. Well, and that I wrote an article on that several years ago, because the First Amendment was designed to protect established churches in the states. It was specifically designed to prevent the what we call the federal government from intruding upon the establishment of churches in the several states. It is not. You'll notice it says Congress shall make no law affecting these, because, like you say, 9 of those 13 states had established churches, and they were determined not to let this agent of theirs, this servant of theirs, undo to affect in any way whatsoever their established church. This is repeated by the founding fathers, repeated in the first Congress. And you can look that article up. I forgot what it's just my name and establishment clause, and it'll come up. I think I wrote it for Abbeville back then. But anyway, yeah, the First Amendment was specifically written not to keep the government from, you know, not to keep individuals from practicing a particular religion. It was specifically designed, and you can read, guys, this is the thing I don't get. We have this interwebs, bleep, bleep, bloop. Look up the records of the first Congress when they argued it.
Well, I know that I read somewhere that there was, I think, one case in the 19th century involving church or religious schools, but then they exploded in the 20th century, especially in the 60s, where maybe in the decade of the 60s, you had more cases dealing with church in public events or church in school, religious activities in schools, than you had all the years since the founding of the nation combined, that they all sprung up in the 60s. And then the following decades, the cases of that came before the Supreme Court, which should never have been there, such as somebody used a PA system to do a prayer at a football game, a school football game. You know, I mean, when I grew up and I was going to high school, college, they always had a prayer right before a football game, or they had a prayer before a commencement graduation. And now, I mean, I don't know if it's now considered illegal because of the Supreme Court or unconstitutional because of the Supreme Court, but that wasn't even something that was considered a question back in the time of the writing of the Constitution.
Right, of course, but Al, this is the easiest question to answer, because they took control of education. And chapter one of Tyranny for Dummies is get control of the education. Because if I can get you talk about why was there one case and then all of a sudden there was a multiplicity? Because by that time, they had controlled education for 100 years. By the time 1960 rolls around, we're looking at that was 99 years since Lincoln created the Department of Education. Now, it was not strong in 1861, but you're talking about by the time you get the 1880s, you get individual schools out in the hinterlands who are receiving marching orders from Washington, D.C. Do you think that people who it is their goal to deny you your liberty are going to continue to let you preach in a high school? No, because they know just like in every era of human history, there is danger in teaching people that there is someone above the king. There's danger in that. So I don't want prayers being said to this God, because I want you to know that the limits of your rights are set by me, not set by your descendancy from deity. And so that's an easy thing to explain, because we must eradicate religion if we are to create people who look vertically for the limits of their life, liberty, and property, as opposed to who look horizontally, as opposed to who look vertically. And so, yes, there's going to continue to be that, because religion is dangerous to despotism, period. It always has been, and it always will be, because it is inherent in every dogma that there is someone above you. And so what tyrant wants you to know that? And so, yes, I'm even at the school I taught in, we had Muslims. We had a significant Muslim population. And these kids they had a moment of silence, you know, the school. These kids did not care that there was no prayer for the Muslims. They did not care, because they're like, we're here for our education. Our religion is at home. And no one cared. But you know what what is it called? Americans for Religious Liberty, or some misnomer. They actually paid for a family to go to that school for the sole purpose of bringing a free exercise clause case, by saying these guys are having a moment of silence, but they all bow their heads and close their eyes. We know what they're really doing. Yeah. And so there the case goes to, you know, goes to the Court of Appeals. It ended up at the Court of Appeals, but that's the purpose. You can't believe in God and believe that the ultimate determiner of your destiny is what 9 black-robed oligarchs say. You must be kept from that. And so that's the greatest danger to the greatest threat to the power of tyrants is sincere religion.
So I got a question for you, Joe. This is something that's bothered me because you've mentioned
boxers.
Oh, sorry.
That was
what Arsenio asked me. I'm sorry.
No, that's what the question that was bothering me for so long. Sleepless nights, boxers or briefs, or commando. But you already said boxers. You can't go commando.
I know. I can't
now.
Go back now. I painted myself
it's
into
not
that.
Retroactive. This is you can't do it. So the First Amendment says Congress shall make no law. And this is something that's bothered me because we've gotten so far away from Congress making laws that now we have moved into, and this is this religious freedom, these two religious freedom cases that are very local. These are local issues, a school district, the Kennedy versus Bremerton school district, and then the Carson versus Macon, one East Coast, West Coast bias. What? So you have this case coming now before it decided 6-3, but this guy, Kennedy, Coach Kennedy, was considered by the school district and apparently by the U.S. Court of Appeals as an agent of the federal government. And this is so bizarre to me, but I see where things have gotten convoluted in a very sinister way. If you want federal money, which would be a lot of money, if you want federal money, then you have to abide by the federal rules. And our rules say that you can't have any type of religious activity like that on your campus. And so you have a guy who is small town guy, not really. I mean, he's not a political agent. He's a coach. But because he is working for a school district, and because the school district takes in federal money, therefore, he's a federal agent or an agent of the federal government, right, if you will.
Yeah, so there's a couple of things there. With
how the hell did we get to this point, more or less?
Well, with shekels come shackles. Mm-hmm. If you want to, you know, get a favorable position on the, you know, the... If you don't want to be left sucking hind tit on the federal sow, you got to be willing to do what it takes. And so you've got to know, that's why I left my job as a teacher in a high school in Arizona, is because they decided finally to accept federal funds. And I'm like, I'm out. Yeah. I'm not being paid with money stolen, and I'm not going to start doing the things that you're now going to require of me. And so I left. And so I feel bad for the coach because I think he's a good guy, but you need to know that if you're going to work, and you say he's not a state actor, he most certainly is. And he knew that upon being hired, because they gave us the whole spiel too about, now that we're accepting federal money, the state of federal law is, if there is the phrase that I got drilled in my head in law school was substantial nexus with the federal government. Right. It's no longer Congress shall make no law. It's nobody can do anything regarding anything if you have a substantial nexus with the federal government. So taking money from D.C., that's the most substantialist of substantial nexuses. Nexi.
Yeah. And I know the group that was, representing the school district was saying that the government, and this is so bizarre to me, but this goes into play with what you were talking about as far as slavish mentality. They were saying when you work for the school district or you work for the government has the right to regulate your speech. Now, on the other side, they were like, the group that was representing Kennedy was like, well, that's extremely dangerous because now we're like, well, how far can we regulate speech? In my mind, I'm thinking the very idea that just because you work for the government, they are allowed to regulate your speech is alarming.
Well, I mean, but again, I don't find it alarming because it's like, you know, it's like that old African parable of what was it? Someone that gives the snake a ride across the river, and the snake's like, I promise I won't bite you. When they get on the other side, the snake bites him and he says, you promised you wouldn't bite me. He says, you knew what I was when you picked me up.
Yeah.
And that's what I think. I mean, how do you work for a public school in America and think you can just go about doing. No, you're joining Darth Vader. Darth Vader's going to straight up tell you what you can and can't say. If you don't like it, there's a real easy answer. You can join with me and with other people in busting up this mafia that has control of the country's education system. You can join us. And guess what? We're going to make it where you can pray. You can do your thing. You can do whatever you want. Your free speech will be unlimited, except, of course, you know, as according to criminal law. But you're free. All of that you'll be able to do. But you can't say that you knew what that snake was when you picked it up, man. I get that you want to have a great, you know, a great schedule. I get that you want to be paid great money for what I understand all of that. But you knew what that snake was when you picked it up. Do I think that that should be how it is, that schools can dictate to you what you can? No, but you know, that's how we are right now. And so instead of going in there and complaining, why don't you come out here with me and let's start knocking the playhouse down, yeah. Right? Instead of being in there and they're telling me what I can and can't say. Dude, you knew that. Yeah. Come out here, use your talent, use your passion, and let's bust up the system. Instead of getting in there and whining when the system bites you in the arse when you knew what it was when you picked it up. And so I sympathize with you, Dustin. I know I agree with you, but I'm just saying at this point, you know that that's what's going to happen. Should that be the case? Of course not. It's Congress shall make no law. The founding fathers never anticipated that a dude in Washington would say a prayer and he'd be in the Supreme Court defending. No, they would be like, what are you doing? Yeah. They would have impeached the entire bloody court for even taking the case because it's a mockery.
But isn't that just the problem, is that they have to take the case now because it is a quote unquote federal case, and they have to take it to, in this quote unquote 6-3, partition that we have right now of, we've got to adjust this and make this right.
Right. That goes back to Alan's point.
Yeah. It shouldn't even been brought up in the first place.
Well, that goes back to Alan's point of, yes, they should take the case. And Alan, I congratulate you on that analogy with Cincinnati, because that's a good point. You could say, I'm Justice Thomas or whatever. I'm going to take this case. I know it shouldn't be here, but it is here. So I'm going to take it in an effort to push it back where it ought to be. Right. So yeah, they have to take the case now. And can they decide? But the problem is, it's not going, because we've had cases like this, and this is where I get to. It's fine. Let's take the W, if you want to look at it that way. Let's take the W, but don't rest on anything. At this moment, take this 10-year interval, this interregnum, and work to permanently, what we call in the law, disgorge that authority from the federal government. So take this time, this little space you've been given, and let's work together to make it where the next time this sort of thing comes up, it doesn't go to the Supreme Court, because none of us recognize their authority to decide such things. But yes, in the meantime, great, let's celebrate the dub for a few minutes, but then let's all get together and make it where we never have to depend on the despotism of oligarchs for the enjoyment of our liberty.
Well, I'll tell you this. There was an incident that took place a couple weeks ago on the Texas border, where the Texas National Guard closed up a gate along the border because there were a lot of illegal aliens congregating, trying to get in. So Texas National Guard locked it up. And then here comes a border patrol that worked for the federal government. Just came, walked up right to the gate, unlocked it, and let everybody in. So, with that said, the only way that I can see the states taking their power back, their rightful power back, their rightful place, is that the governors are going to have to tell state officials or anyone who works for the state, grow some balls. I'm right behind you. If that Border Patrol guy comes up and tries to unlock the door, arrest him. Just arrest him. Which I think DeSantis said about any federal agents that show up in Florida for, I don't know if it, I don't remember exactly what it was about.
Red flag laws.
Regardless, when DeSantis did that, I was real happy to see that because that's what we need. We're not going to get 50 of DeSantis's, but we can get at least 20 some number. And if they stand up, if they stand up to them, you know what happened. You know, if you look at your history, what happened in Salem and what happened in Lexington and Concord was that people united and stood in front of the Redcoats when the Redcoats were coming to, you know, confiscate arms. You know, there was no shooting at Salem, but there was at Lexington. But what happened after Lexington? The Redcoats, they got their asses kicked from Concord all the way to Boston. Now, I'm not suggesting, because I know someone's going to red flag me and say, oh, he's suggesting an insurrection. I'm not. What I am saying is that, you know, we need to take our rightful place. The state needs to do it. The governors need to do it. The governors need to step up to the plate and say, we are not going to allow this usurpation that never should have belonged to the federal government in the first place.
100%. And you say that we can't get 50 DeSantis's, and that's true. But my attack on this has always been this, and I think I explained it in that, you know, what degree of madness is that, no, but if you have a DeSantis, let's just use him as an example, who issues a blanket statement, we will not, within the sovereign borders of Florida, we will not enact, participate, or fund any unconstitutional policy, program, or act of the federal government. We will not do that. And if he stands by that, you will see that the influx of people to Florida encourages Georgia, you know, South Carolina, Tennessee to say, well, we want some of that prosperity. So let's see if we should do that same thing. And I think you'll see it's just like when you're in school, you sit there and for 30 minutes, no one turns in a test. Soon as someone gets up and turns it in, 30 kids are turning in their test. Why? Because they're just waiting for someone to break that seal. And I think if we could have one governor, I think you would see it spread among the more liberty-minded states of Missouri, Oklahoma, Arkansas, Tennessee, Texas. I think you would see Arizona, Nevada, Idaho. I think you would see that there would be this spreading of this liberty-minded, very staunch 10th Amendment stance, and it would spread, and pretty soon you would have such an easy way to know, I want to live in this handful of states because that's where I'm more prosperous. That's where I'm around people that I don't have to, you know, worry about constantly fighting political battles. It would be a lovely expression of federalism as it was designed to work. I mean, it's the whole, you know, Abbe de Mobley to John Adams, who said, it is a great advantage that y'all have not confounded those 13 independent republics into one republic. It is a great advantage to you that you haven't done that. That's how America will maintain her liberty. Well, we didn't, and we haven't.
Yeah, we tried that, the Albany plan. I think Joseph Galloway suggested a plan of union. And this was right around the time of the French and Indian War. And yeah, they were like, no, we are 13 separate countries. Actually, you know, there were more than 13. There was, I think, 23 colonies in North America, but only 13 rebelled. Hell, you know, Georgia didn't even show up for the first Continental Congress.
Right.
But
right.
Was this the book you were talking about? Really? I liked it. It's
It's an amazing book. I don't know who wrote it, but I
highly recommend this. What Degree of Madness? Someone named Joe Wolverton, JD.
That even the name sounds smart.
Is he related to you by any chance?
The name sounds made up.
It is a weird experience when people say to you, "You have a cool last name." I'm like, "What do I say to that?"
Thank you.
Thanks. I mean, You know, it's I didn't do anything, but okay.
You know, Alan, to your point, and it ties in with what Joe was saying. Shekels make shackles. God, I wish that we would have governors that would push back and say, "No, we're not going to do this." But like we were saying earlier, you have so much federal money flowing into these states, into these entities, and people are, at least people feel as though their lives depend upon that financial substance, that we've created this Pandora's box that the Pandora's box is, I guess you could say, made out of gold, and we opened it up, and the idea would be to hopefully, possibly, although it sounds impossible, is to put everything back and push that federal Pandora's box back into Washington, D.C., and then allow, I know you hate that word, Joe, as I do, but enable or go back to originate for the states to be their own republics as they are and as they should be.
Well, we have to grant them the powers. The states grant the federal government its powers.
You make, and I know you maybe you did it purposefully because you are certainly erudite enough to make such a reference, but Pandora's box, you know, Pandora, all, you know, Greek for all the gifts. What was the one thing that clung? It was actually a jar. What was that one thing that clung to the jar?
Oh, it's hope. Yeah.
Exactly, right? So that's what I'm saying. We have definitely done that. We have opened Pandora's jar, Pandora's box, whatever you want to call it. But there is hope. And to me, that hope is the same hope that Madison, when he said, you know, knowledge will forever govern ignorance. And I think that can we get and read James Harrington in Oceana. He makes the most passionate appeal to say all it takes to restore liberty to a republic once it is lost is for a generation of young men to be taught founding principles of liberty. And now we would say young men and young women. So I think we do have hope that clinging to that Pandora's jar is the hope that if we can catch these kids young enough to where we do not have to deprogram them, if we can catch kids as Sidney called them, this generation of young men who is kept hid and unregarded from Caesar. If we can find this generation of kids, or like, what was it, Elisha? I have 7,000 in Israel who've not bowed the knee to Baal. If we can find that generation of young people who have not been sent to Rome and been taught to praise Caesar, we have a more than good shot at doing this, because those kids will be no better or worse than our founding fathers. And if they're taught those principles from the cradle, the way these, you know, Madison and Jefferson and Washington, they will insist that they push this government back into the box established for it. And if they don't, then they will have someone like a Jefferson who will say, then I guess it's time to abolish and establish new guardians for our liberty. But that's the hope. And I love that you made it a Pandora's box thing, because hope clings to it, man. And I cling to that hope that all it takes is one. Why didn't James Madison Sr. light it off?
Yeah.
Why didn't George Washington's dad set it off? Because it took that generation raised from the cradle to say, hey, that has no authority over me. And once that generation from the cradle was raised that way, by the time they became 20 years old, they were like, you can keep pushing. We'll light this candle. We're not afraid to. And we're going to have I firmly believe when people say, oh, it's beyond all hope, not even close, not even close. I know that the Lord has set aside those kids who have not bowed the knee to Baal. And we're going to find them, and we're going to push the federal government either back in its box, and if it refused to go, then we'll just set up new guardians for our liberty the way our fathers taught us to.
Amen to that. Elijah was the guy And
did I say Elisha?
Yeah, you said Elisha, but
it's Elijah. It with the question mark. Yeah, it's
but Oceania. Aren't we at war with Oceania? Aren't we always
we've never
war
been at war with Oceania.
With Oceania?
We've never been at war with Eurasia.
Eurasia, is that what it was?
The 1984. Commonwealth of Oceania, right there.
Harry Dude, Harry. That book, if you like the Keep and Bear Arms, there's two things I'll tell you, man. If you haven't read Harrington's Oceania and you haven't read Tench Cox, then you don't know about the right to keep and bear arms. Because those two men, Tench Cox, forgotten founding father, and James Harrington, who no less a martyr to the cause than Sidney was. Those two books will put you right where you want to be when it comes to a natural defense of the right to keep and bear arms outside of dusty parchments.
And Dustin Bass. Hey, okay, so we are far into this conversation. Alan, do you want to tackle the abortion thing, or do you want to...
Now, let's... good excuse to do it for another time.
All right. Yeah, because this is going to go down a different bit of a rabbit trail than what we've discussed, which is I would like to go into the defining terms of a lot of things. But, man, that would be probably another hour-long conversation because there's a lot to
unpack
there.
That's definitely a good one because the legalism, that is astounding. I mean, I love what the judges said in that case, the case overturning. You know, I don't think they ever had that authority, but given that they had that authority, the things they said were spot on.
Yeah, and it goes back to, well, one of two things. One, they had to take, from my perspective, they had to take this case and they had to take a case that they thought was worthy of taking on Roe v. Wade, which is Roe v. Wade 1, and I think we can all agree, should never even have gotten to the appeals process. It's such a joke of just from a legal standpoint, not even a constitutional standpoint, just a legal standpoint, it's garbage. And two, I think just having to sort of put that back in the Pandora's box there. So, Joe, last thing for you. Give us a rundown of, we've already mentioned your Amargi group a couple of times, but tell us what it is that you're doing, how people can get on. I know that there are multiple ways to pay for the classes and that you will definitely work with whoever wants to join. But what will they get from it?
Okay, so mrgegroup.com, and on there it explains, basically, I offer classes live via Zoom. They're 1 hour a week, each class, and I offer a class on the Constitution, a class on U.S. history, a class on Western civilization, which is essentially ancient Greece and ancient Rome, the stories from those. I offer the class on the Founder's Recipe, the 37 men most often quoted by the founding generation. I offer a class on agrarianism in U.S. history, where we read Hesiod and Virgil and the founding fathers on why farmers are the most virtuous people. I offer a class on de Tocqueville. Both we include his Democracy in America and his book on the old regime and the French Revolution. We do both of those books because it's astounding the insights that man had for such a young man, particularly. I offer a class on The Law by Frederick Bastiat. I think that's it. But
did you mention Tacitus? I don't know if you did.
Tacitus, yes, Germania by Tacitus. That's right. So we study the our ancestors, Tacitus writing story of our ancestors in Germany. I say our, if you're English or German, your ancestors around the year AD 90. Fascinating look at liberty, the way it was once understood before the concept of, you know, tyrannical government, at least in Germany. The Romans certainly knew about it, and Tacitus uses his history of Germany to sort of remind his fellow Romans, this is how we used to be. Yeah, so anybody can take it. There's literally no one I've ever turned away. If you a dollar now and a dollar when I catch you kind of thing, I've literally never turned away anyone because my goal, as I said a minute ago in a response, is to cling, you know, that last little gift clinging to the lid of, you know, to the rim of the jar is hope. And I believe, as Harrington said, as Sidney said, that we can restore liberty to this people if we can get a generation of young people raised from the cradle to understand principles of liberty upon which this culture was built. If we can do that, I do not doubt that we have hope. So MRG group, that's our whole goal, is to provide those lessons that just no one ever teaches anymore. And the good thing about it, I will say, guys, is no one has to believe me or trust in me, because it's constant references to the source. We don't drink downstream. I don't use textbooks. We use the glory of technology, and I will show you the documents on screen. We'll read them together to where you walk away with a very firm foundation of, a very firm understanding of the foundation upon which our civilization was established. And you feel good about that because you know that it isn't your teacher's opinion. I simply, I'm not, Galileo. I'm just the telescope. I just enable you to see those truths for yourself. And that's the whole reason that I live now, man. I don't have any other purpose for my life other than I'm hopeful that we can have that generation that will rise up who've never bowed the knee to Baal, and that we can restore liberty to this people and once again have it be, that shining city on a hill.
I can recommend your class. I really enjoyed the Constitution. I did end up purchasing Pinkerton and Upshur, because I know that those were brought up in class. But I enjoyed the fact that there was no memorization. It was discussions. You showed primary sources and made us think and discuss how things turned out. And yeah, I did walk away feeling upset, but it wasn't anything that you did. It's everything that the people who took power and gave themselves even more power when they were not supposed to.
Right. And I tell people that take the class, I'm not going to tell you what to think. I just want you to think. I don't even care if you think like me. I just care that you think about it. And, there is virtue and joy in showing these documents and these books that have not been discussed for generations, because when you read them, there's power in them. I don't have to say much. If I'm, when we did Founder's Recipe and I'm just like, let's just read Sidney in his own words, I can just stand back because the power in it is undeniable. And you see, oh yeah, this is why 50 dairy farmers stood on Lexington Green at 4:30 in the morning. This is why they did it. This is the understanding that they had, right? And we can have that. We will have it again. We absolutely will have it again. We will, as the Spartans used to say, I will come home with my shield or on it. I will not leave the battlefield without dying in an attempt to vanquish the foe of tyranny.
Beautifully said, as always, Joe, and as always, beautiful. You.
Yes. Well, there I'm nothing if not strikingly handsome. And so if you read that the right way, you understand I just said I'm nothing. But
thanks again, Joe, for joining us, man. Always a great conversation. Really, every time we talk, I know Raleigh Allen thinks the same way, but it's like that bit of inspiration, also at the same time, frustration towards like, can we please move towards where we need to be instead of continuing in this cyclone of...
Well, you guys, seriously, I know, circling back to the beginning, don't sell yourself short. You are having great impact. You're doing good work. You're really exposing people to things that haven't been taught, and you've earned your success, which very few people can say in the sort of business that we're in. Very few people can say that they've earned their success. You guys definitely have, because we all started about the same time, and you guys have just really accelerated your way to an exemplary position. And I am very inspired by you, and I admire your tenacity. And I want to say your erudition. I really mean that, because so many people They have talking points. And if you say anything beyond those talking points, they'll just drag you back to the talking points. But you guys, you read the real stuff. As you can see on your Instagram feed, y'all really read the books that matter, and your erudition is evident in your content. And I'm really grateful for you for that.
I'm honored. Thank you very much. I really am.
That means a ton coming from you, Joe, because Alan and I respect the hell out of you. Thanks again for being on the show. Thanks for all that you do. And obviously we'll keep in contact because we're friends.
Yes, yeah. Yes, we are.
You know, if you hadn't said anything and I was elected president, I was going to make you attorney general. But
dang it, man. Dang it.
Here we are. You had to say something.
This close to a cool office in the Marble Palace. Dang it.
Well, Alan, you can still
become president, Dustin? Are both your parents Native Americans?
Yes, I can. But honestly, with the trend of how things are going, what's really to stop Alan from becoming president?
Sure, nothing.
Exactly.
Obama did it.
Yeah, so you can still do it.
I'm sure they'll find some Facebook messages from 15 years ago.
The only thing that would stop Alan from doing it is Alan.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll find something that I said that was not woke. So,
all right, brethren. Well, thank y'all for having me on. Seriously, very, very, very big honor.
The honor is ours.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you, Joe. Bye bye.
All right. Thanks again, Joe. Greatly appreciated. Fantastic conversation. Got a little hot there for a little bit. Actually, for a long time. And it's always a spicy conversation with Joe because he's super, I don't want to say passionate, because passionate sounds like he's just excited about what he's talking about, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. He is incredibly knowledgeable, and you can just, like, those quotes that come out, and he's just, you know, but that is the heart and soul of that man. And two, I wish that was the heart and soul of this country today. But we have fallen very far from it. I know we could talk about the conversation itself as we typically do, Alan. But just for the sake of time, I think we just move on to our book and movie recommendations. What do you say?
Yeah, unfortunately, it was a great conversation, but I have to agree with you. Let's get to the book and movie. All right, so movie. Let's do the movie first. I watched Sicario the other day. I really liked it. I mean, that is wow. Now, I did also watch the sequel to Sicario. It's called The Day of the Soldado. You know, it's good, but not as good as the original Sicario. That one, you know, that has Benicio del Toro, Josh Brolin, and that Emily girl, whose name escapes me. Wrong one. Here we go. Emily Blunt. She's married to that guy that was in 13 Days, whose name I can never remember.
Of course, John Krasinski.
Yeah, whatever. Emily Blunt. That's the person you want to think of right there. She's a... Anyway, so, great movie. Highly enjoyed it. Very entertaining. Books. I'm going to discuss the books that Joe Wolverton has. First one is called What Degree of Madness? Highly recommend. You will learn a lot. It, you know, talks about what, you know, the discussion about why we have the Constitution. The Constitution was written as a contract between the general government, which was what we called the federal government back then, but the general government and the states. The states had all the power. They granted certain powers to the general government, and that's why the Constitution was written, to limit the general government. And it was a promise, hey, we'll abide by these rules, grant us certain powers, and we will manage the country in a very good way, dealing with stuff that you states can't. So that's what this book talks about. Now, where did the Founding Fathers get all their information from, their ideas? This is Joe's other book, The Founder's Recipe. Just, you know, it mentions people, some of whom I've never even heard of, like a Pufendorf. Never heard of that guy. That was the first time. But some of the others, like John Locke and Grotius and several other people. Cicero's in there. You will learn where they learned their, where they got their information from, Harrington, the Oceana guy. So anyway, those are the books that I would recommend, written by Joe Wolverton.
All right. Well, awesome. So my book and movie recommendation, I'll start with my movie. I referenced the JFK assassination earlier. So last year, Oliver Stone came out with a new documentary called JFK Revisited Through the Looking Glass. I encourage you to check. I mean, if you are interested in the JFK assassination, which it's hard not to be, what a crap show that ended up being as far as the investigation, and an absolute American tragedy, one of the worst this country has ever endured, with the assassination. So, yeah, go check that out, and just, you'll find out all of the missing links and the holes in the stories, and it's just, it's really tragic all the way through. My book recommendation is The Notes on the Debates of the Constitutional Convention by James Madison. James Madison is Wolverton's main guy. But yeah, this is how the Constitution was debated and put together. And so reading this book is really important to know what all they were thinking while they were discussing how to put together our Constitution and our Republic in the summer of 1787. So go check those books out. Alan, it's crazy that you just watched Sicario. It's one of my favorite movies. Very, very cool movie. I encourage you to go watch Hell or High Water as well, written by the same guy.
Who's in that one? Because I think I've heard of it, but...
It's Chris Pine, Ben Foster, and Jeff Bridges. Really good. It's a modern Western. But anyways, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for the show. Yeah, we went a little long last time and this time. We're going to try to scale it down. But hey, when we get excited about a conversation, what do you want us to do? We can't just shortchange you. We will talk to you next week. Say goodbye, Alan.
Goodbye, Alan.